This is Henry Seidel, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed. In one moment, the search for Julian Penmark, address unknown. And here again is Henry Simon.
In many cases, the tracing of a missing person involves more than just a search. So often, complications crop up which seriously impede our investigations, and occasionally even force us to abandon them altogether. Then, of course, there are those cases in which complications are present from the very outset, such as in that detailed on the file card which I have before me now. It's on a Tuesday morning in the June of 1951, when I was visited here in my office by a Mrs. Russell Webster. A fine-looking, well-groomed woman in her mid-50s, she explained that she'd been twice widowed. And until 5 days before, she'd been sharing a flat with a 28-year-old bachelor son, Julian Penmark, to whom she'd given birth in the early years of her marriage.
I have no other children, only Julian. His father died when he was 10, and I had to take a job to support him. Then, a few years later, I married Russell Webster.
And Julian remained with you?
We sent him to a boarding school and then on to Oxford. He and Russell were never on the best of terms. After his graduation, he took rooms somewhere in Knightsbridge. We saw very little of him. And then, when Russell died in 1947, he came back to live with me.
At your suggestion or his?
We were both lonely. It seemed the obvious thing.
And you've been together ever since?
Except for a short period, yes.
You left home 5 days ago, sir?
Last Thursday morning.
Gave you no previous indication of his intention?
None whatever.
Well, did he leave a note or any form of message?
Nothing.
He took clothing with him? Money?
He certainly had money, or should have done. I paid him his monthly allowance only the day before.
Allowance?
He doesn't work. I've been supporting him.
Why is that exactly?
He's not terribly strong. He tires easily.
Has he ever worked?
Not for a salary, no.
How long have you been paying him this allowance?
Since he came down from Oxford. Before that, he received £40 a month.
And now?
100. Russell was a wealthy man. He left us both amply provided for.
So on the day prior to your son's departure, you paid him £100?
Well, 85, to be exact. He'd borrowed 15 from the previous month.
£25 a week. Quite a substantial amount. What did he spend it on?
Clothes and books, mostly. He reads a great deal. Then, of course, he has his stamp collection. He spends quite a lot on that. And his records.
Records?
He's interested in classical music. He has hundreds of recordings.
I see. You've never urged him to take a job?
I suggested it from time to time, but I only succeeded in making him annoyed. He said if I was tired of having him about the place, he'd get out and find other lodgings. Well, naturally, I didn't want that, so I let him be.
Did he have any romantic interests?
No, he's never been particularly interested in women.
Any close friends?
Not that I know of. He hates mixing, he always has done.
Is he the shy type or just unsociable?
Just unsociable, I'm afraid. He's certainly never been too shy to be rude to people, friends of mine and so forth. And when I say rude, I mean deliberately and pointedly insulting. It reached a stage where I didn't invite anyone over for fear of what he might say to them.
Has he always been like this?
Oh, more or less. But it's been worse since he got out of hospital.
Hospital?
Actually, it was a sort of rest home, a sanatorium.
Oh?
He had a breakdown. It was only slight, but, well, he was quite ill.
Nervous breakdown?
Yes.
How long was he inside this sanatorium?
5 months.
What form did this breakdown take exactly?
A form?
Yes, the breakdown.
He acquired a sudden passion for For setting things on fire.
Setting things on fire?
Unfortunately, he was prevented from doing any real damage, but, well, it was all most upsetting.
I imagine it would be. Did he enter the sanatorium of his own free will?
On a doctor's advice, yes.
And when he came out?
He seemed all right, just moody, restless.
I see. How long ago was all this?
Close enough to 3 years.
And there's been no recurrence of his firebug tendencies?
No apparent recurrence. But that's what worries me so. I'm wondering if his disappearance signifies that he...
he might be up to his old tricks again.
Well, yes. If he suffered a relapse, there's no telling what could happen.
I suppose you haven't thought of contacting the police.
The police?
Under the circumstances, you know, it might be advisable.
To set the law on my own son?
No, to have them trace him.
That's why I've come to you. If I brought the police into it, he'd never forgive me. It'd be the end of everything.
The point I'm trying to make is, supposing he does some sort of damage.
Well, I want him found before he has a chance to.
Beyond 5 days already.
You don't understand, Mr. Simon. I'm not saying he has suffered a relapse. I'm saying it's possible.
Even so.
If you're not prepared to accept the case, of course, I'll go elsewhere. There are any amount of private inquiries agencies about.
I didn't say I wasn't prepared to accept the case, Mr. Webster. I merely raised the question as to whether or not it might be advisable to... contact the police.
Well, I'm telling you now, I won't have the police involved.
As you wish.
You wouldn't approach them against my will.
Only if I felt it to be absolutely necessary.
You gave me your word earlier that everything I told you would be treated in the strictest confidence.
So it will be. You can walk right out of this office now, quite secure in the knowledge that not a word of what you said to me will be repeated. But if you press me to accept this case, I must act as I think best, in my own interest just as much as in yours. Now, that's not to say that I shall go to the police. Chances are it won't be necessary. But if, during the course of this investigation, I decide that it is, then you must abide by my decision. It seems, Mrs. Webster, an organization such as ours just has to protect itself. At the same time, of course, as it's protecting its clients. If it were otherwise, we wouldn't be in business. In plain terms, we just can't afford the risk of becoming accessories before the fact.
You talk of accessories and protection. All I'm asking you to do is to find my son.
And I told you we shall do everything possible to, if you're agreeable to the stipulation which I've just made.
Well, so long as I have your assurance, you won't act indiscreetly.
I believe we have something of a reputation for not doing so, Mrs. Webster. It's our policy to be as discreet as possible, regardless of the situation or the circumstances. I see no reason at all why an exception should be made in this case.
I'm sorry. I spoke rather thoughtlessly. Please forgive me.
No, there's nothing to forgive. I fully understand your anxiety, Mrs. Webster. You're under a considerable strain. It's not very surprising that you should be on edge. I just want to be quite certain that you appreciate my position, that you're not labouring under any sort of false notion.
Of course.
Now we understand each other. Do you still want to leave things in my hands?
If you're agreeable, yes.
Fine. I'll just jot down one or two more particulars and then we can commence our investigations right away. The tracing of Julian Penmark was not an assignment I relished. The contrary, in fact. For I had long been wary of cases involving the mentally maladjusted. For one thing, they rarely do what's expected of them, and they often do what isn't. For another, they have quite a habit of spelling trouble with a capital T. Be this as it may, however, I saw no legitimate reason for refusing the case, and an hour later I followed my client's departure by sending for Agent Paul Study, who, on being acquainted with facts, expressed sentiments very similar to my own.
A firebug, eh? Oh, sir, help me, that's about all I need to wind up in the nut house myself.
Well, there's nothing at all tangible to suggest he's still a victim of his old obsession. He was supposedly cured 3 years ago.
Yeah, supposedly.
And he wasn't in a mental asylum. He was in a sanatorium.
Okay, I'll go quietly. Where do I start?
I think the best plan would be to have a word with the doctor who treated him. Perhaps he might be able to shed a little more light on the subject. Oh, that wasn't intended as a pun.
Yuck, yuck.
His name is Cabo, Charles Cabo.
Brain specialist?
Something of the kind. Mrs. Webster referred to him as a doctor of psychiatry. He has rooms in Belmore Row, just along from Hollywood.
Yeah, I know.
It's number 34.
And he's the one who put him away, eh?
Well, he recommended a rest cure.
Well, no harm in checking with him, I guess.
Mrs. Webster said she'd give him a ring. He ought to be expecting you. At the Belmore Road consulting rooms of Charles Cabot, Study was ushered into the presence of a tall, gaunt-featured man with a slight stoop. who informed him that Mrs. Webster phoned not 20 minutes before.
Yes, she said you'd probably be paying me a visit, Mr. Studdy, but I didn't realize she meant quite so soon.
Well, I'll be as brief as I can, sir. I guess she explained about her son leaving home.
She did, and I'm not sure that I like the sound of it.
You figure he's had a relapse?
It's not my business to figure, Mr. Studdy, but I'd say it's on the cards.
Well, I understand he was cured when he left the sanatorium.
So far as could be estimated, he was. But it's quite impossible to be 100% certain about anyone, particularly a person like Penmark. I did everything I could for him, but for some reason he refused to allow himself to cooperate. It was almost as if he didn't want to be cured. Moreover, he took an intense dislike to me from the moment of our first meeting. I was an intruder into his subconscious, and he resented me because of it. On one occasion, he actually accused me of trying to destroy his sanity. Very difficult patient, I'm afraid.
He wasn't dangerous.
No, not in the normal sense.
Except when he got his hands on a box of matches.
Precisely.
Well, if he has suffered a relapse, do you feel he may have picked up where he left off, so to speak?
Well, if you'd asked me that question an hour ago, my answer would have been very definitely no. Now I'm not so sure.
How come?
Well, as I said, he had no love for me, and in fact, his dislike amounted to a hatred.
So?
According to his mother, he left home last Thursday morning. On Thursday night, my wife and I were visiting some friends. We got home rather late to find the police waiting for us.
Police?
And our house had been burnt down.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
Studdy is used to sudden twists and surprises, but he was hardly prepared for Charles Caddo's abrupt announcement that his house had been burned down during the evening of the day on which our quarry had left home. To encounter such a very explosive turn of events so early in our investigation was unusual enough in itself, but in this case it was akin to a volcanic eruption.
You mean to tell me that your place was burnt down completely?
It might as well have been. The walls were still standing, the interior was gutted.
Oh, brother.
And that's why I was so shocked to hear from Mrs. Webster that her son had disappeared from home that same morning.
Do you know if he knew where you lived?
My address is in the phone book. It wouldn't have been too difficult for him to find out.
No, I suppose not. And he really had it in for you, huh?
Well, as I say, he was far from being my most ardent admirer.
Yeah, puts the lid on things properly. I guess you've already phoned the police.
No. As a matter of fact, I wanted to have a word with you first.
Well, have the ruins been examined?
Yes, an insurance expert looked them over yesterday.
And?
He was unable to determine the cause. In fact, he wasn't even sure if the fire had started inside the house or outside. He seemed to favor the former, but he was by no means definite about it.
Yeah. Well, I think he'll be definite enough when he hears about Penmark.
No, I'm not so sure.
No?
We've only the fact that the fellow left home that morning to go on.
Yeah. But it's, and I think you'll have to admit this, it is kind of a queer coincidence.
Even so, it might be no more than that. You see, my wife happens to be an extremely careless woman. She almost burnt the place down once before by leaving the iron on. And then on another occasion, she left a lighted cigarette on the mantelpiece. It dropped on the carpet. If I hadn't spotted it when I did, well, you see what I mean. There's nothing to say that the same thing didn't happen again, or something similar.
This insurance guy, this inspector, he found no evidence of foul play?
No. He found no evidence of any kind.
Hmm.
The thing is, you see, I don't want to charge Penmark with arson only to discover he had nothing to do with it. I'd much prefer to sound him out first. Which is why I'm rather glad that you people are on the job. If you can find him before I take action, then I'll be a lot happier.
Yeah, well, supposing, just supposing, of course. But supposing there are others he has a grudge against. Well, what about their places?
Now, my dear Mr. Studdy, you don't seem to realize the man can't be arrested simply because he chose to leave home when he did. Besides, if he was responsible, and he gets wind the police are on his track, well, there's no telling what he might get up to. But if you just seek him out quietly without any fuss, well, with an even chance of getting at the truth, painlessly and effectively.
Well, okay, but I still think it's a matter for the police.
Oh, he shouldn't be too hard to trace. Suppose we give it 24 hours. If you haven't found him by this time tomorrow, I'll do as you advise, and I'll contact the police.
Yes, well, as you say, Stanley, it is a little much of a coincidence, but of course I can see Keller's point. He's loath to accuse Denmark openly without some sort of concrete evidence. If he didn't, it was later discovered the fellow was nowhere at all near his home when the fire broke out, he'd be placed in rather an embarrassing position, wouldn't he? And especially in view of the possibility it could have been due to his wife's carelessness.
Yeah, well, Chief, what bothers me most is the thought that it might happen again to somebody else. In which case, it'll be also on our conscience as well as Cabot's.
All right, then. Supposing we go to the police ourselves, what can they do? Even if they were successful in tracing him, they couldn't hold him. Not for any length of time, anyway. Now, of course, the thought of the effect it might have on him, being hunted down like a criminal, it could very well cause him to lose his head completely, and perhaps do something desperate, whereas a private inquiry might have worth any sort of risk of that.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, those were Cabot's sentiments, exactly.
All right, then, let's do as he suggests. Give us another 24 hours, shall we?
With nothing whatever to go on, we're going to have our work cut out for us.
Perhaps another chat with Mrs. Webster might be in order. If he has any other sort of grudges, she might know about them.
She didn't mention anybody in particular, apart from Cabot, did she?
Only mentioned him in his professional capacity. She made no reference at all to her son's animosity towards him.
Should I tell her about the fire?
Might be an idea. Might help her to appreciate the extreme seriousness of the situation.
Yeah. Well, I sure don't envy her position any.
No, nor do I envy his.
But this is dreadful, Mr. Studdy. Why wasn't I told sooner?
Well, we just found out ourselves, ma'am.
I suppose Mr. Simon is all for going to the police at once.
Well, not exactly, ma'am. He and Mr. Cabot share the same view. We should try it our way first.
If he does decide to go to them, I'll understand. You might tell him that.
Thank you, ma'am, I will. But right now, the big question is there anybody else your son doesn't like? Anybody at all? Anybody he has a beef against?
Not that I can think of. But then he's so uncommunicative.
Did you know of his feelings towards Cabot?
I knew he felt a certain resentment. It was the same with Dr. Kearns, but I had no idea.
Dr. Kearns?
The superintendent at the sanatorium. They didn't get on very well.
So it's possible he could hold a grudge there, too,
huh? Well, yes, I suppose it is. But I don't quite understand.
It's simple enough, Mrs. Webster. If your son started one fire, he'd be capable of starting another. Now, where can I locate this Dr. Kearns?
Oh, at the sanatorium, I imagine.
Sanatorium?
Down in Purley.
Purley. Is that in Surrey?
Yes. Hotham Parade. Burnside, it's called.
All right, I'll just jot that down. Burnside, Purley, Surrey. Right.
Please God, he won't do any more damage.
Well, we don't know for sure that he's done any at all yet. But you're certain there's nobody else? Going back to his Oxford days, maybe, or later?
The only other person I can think of is Alan Streatham.
Alan Streatham?
Well, they shared a flat in Knightbridge for a while, before Julian came back to live here.
Yes?
I don't know what it was about, but they had some kind of argument, and Alan moved out.
To where?
I'm not sure, but his mother's a friend of mine. She'd know.
Well, can you contact her?
I'll phone her, if you like.
Fine.
I've an idea he's married now, with children of his own.
Do you think you could make that call right away?
Oh, of course. You wait here. I'll do it at once.
It transpired that Alan Streatham, who had been at Oxford with our quarry, was now living with his wife and two children in a house at South Wimbledon. He worked in the city, however, and was interviewed by Studdy in his Lombard Street office later that same afternoon.
That's correct, Mr. Studdy. Julian and I shared a flat together. Let's see. For about 3 months.
3 months. There was some trouble between you, I understand.
The trouble was all on his side. He's an odd sort. Always has been. Quite impossible to get on with for any length of time.
Well, just what do you mean by odd?
Just odd. Queer up top. I never liked him much, but I needed a place, and, well, I moved in with him. Well, for a while, things went smoothly enough. Then he started picking arguments, carrying on generally. Finally, he took something I said the wrong way, and that was it. We had the most colossal bust-up, and I cleared out. I don't even remember what it was about now. Oh, something quite trivial.
Have you seen him since?
No.
Yeah. Your wife and children, are they alone in the house much?
Oh, not at present. They're spending a week with my wife's parents in Somerset. Why?
Penmark's disappeared from his home. It's possible he may have suffered a mental breakdown. Seems he has a passion for starting fires.
Oh, wait a minute. You're not suggesting...
I'm not suggesting anything. But if I were you, I'd get somebody to keep an eye on your house for the next couple of days, just to be on the safe side.
But I...
Meantime, if you see any sign or hear anything of him, I'd like you to phone me at this number, if you would, immediately. Now, if I'm not there, you leave a message with my chief, Henry Simon.
After leaving Streatham, Studdy proceeded direct to the Burnside Sanatorium in the outlying suburb of Purley. There he sought out the superintendent, Dr. Norman Kearns, a middle-aged, graying-haired man with a protruding chin and a pockmarked forehead.
Julian Penmark.
That's right.
Yes, yes, of course, Mr. Studdy. I remember him very well. Patient here for, 4 or 5 months, I think.
Uh-huh. Tell me, did he give you very much trouble?
Well, let's put it this way, I wasn't sorry to see the last of him.
Uh-huh. Kind of difficult to handle, eh?
Yes, at times it was. Extremely difficult. Rather an aggressive young man, yeah?
Yes. Well, according to his mother, he wasn't very fond of you.
Well, of course, he didn't seem any too fond of anyone. Least of all of Cabot or myself.
I don't know whether you've heard it or not, but last Thursday night, Cabot's home was burnt down.
What's that?
It's quite true. Reduced to a shell.
Good Lord.
That's why I'm taking this opportunity of warning you. May not have been Penmark's doing, of course, but...
Yes, yes, I'm afraid you're a little late.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Saturday night, my own home met with a similar fate. Yes, it was burnt to the ground.
If there had been any doubt before, there could be none now. Two men, both doctors and both out of favor with Julian Penmark, had lost their homes by fire. That of Kearns, an 8-room bungalow not very far from the sanatorium, being completely destroyed. Initially, neither doctor connected the destruction with a former patient, but it was now quite clear that Penmark had been responsible in both cases. However, before the police could be informed, and while Studdy was still at the sanatorium, I received a phone call from our quarry's former friend, Alan Streatham.
Mr. Studdy told me to phone you, Mr. Simon.
Oh, yes?
After his warning, I rang a couple of my neighbours and asked them to keep a lookout for any loiterers in the vicinity.
Mm-hmm. And?
A moment ago, one of them rang back and said there was a man hanging about on the other side of the street. His description fits Penmark.
I see. What's the position now?
Well, the chap next door spotted him too. They're both out in their gardens keeping an eye on him. Oh, I doubt if he'll make any move till they go back inside.
Would you excuse me a moment? I'm on the other line. It might be studying.
I'll hold on.
Yes?
Hey, Study here, Chief. I thought I'd let you know I'm calling the police in.
Oh?
Yeah, I'll give you all the details when I get back to the office.
I have Streatham on the line now. It seems a man fitting Penmark's description has been seen hanging about by a neighbor.
Well, in that case, I better make it fast. I'll call the local station, have them send them boys here right away.
Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
The man seen by Streatham's neighbor was indeed Julian Penmark, who was duly arrested and then held on 2 charges of arson. Both were subsequently dropped, and he was committed to a home for further treatment. It is to be hoped that he has since recovered the balance of his mind and may one day resume a normal life amongst normal people. And now, as always, this is Henry Simon inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you Not goodbye, but simply au revoir.
We hope that you enjoyed this recording. And for more happy listening, please visit otrcat.com.